Last night, the Atlanta Braves were eliminated from the Major League Baseball postseason, but not without some controversy. Braves fans there doing the tomahawk chop at last night's game. It's an entire stadium of people chopping their arms in the air, sometimes swinging foam tomahawks provided by the team, and singing a fabricated war chant. Well, just two pitches into last night's game, after the team announced it would no longer hand out foam tomahawks, fans did it anyway. You see, last week, Ryan Helsley, a rookie pitcher for their opponent, the St. Louis Cardinals, and a citizen of the Cherokee Nation, called the Braves out for allowing their fans to do the offensive tomahawk chop at their games. The team has also encouraged fans by using the hashtag ChopOn and would play the chant's melody through its PA system. The Braves took several days to react, but have since said they take Helsley's concerns seriously, no longer giving away foam tomahawks to fans, and promised to, quote, take several efforts to reduce the tomahawk chop during our in-ballpark presentation on Wednesday. Nick Martin is a staff writer for The New Republic and member of the Saponi tribe, where he writes about Native and Indigenous issues. Nick, welcome to the show.
Thanks so much for having me.
So last week, the St. Louis Cardinals pitcher Ryan Helsley, who's a citizen of the Cherokee Nation, called the Braves out on the offensive, quote, tomahawk chop that a lot of fans use at home games. What was his critique of this?
So after game one that the Cardinals won in Atlanta, Ryan Helsley spoke with the St. Louis Dispatch, and basically what he was trying to acknowledge was that he felt like the tomahawk chop and the chant that accompanies it, he said that it was a misrepresentation of the Cherokee people or Native Americans in general. And it wasn't so much about him being offended, it was just about it further perpetuates this misconception of Native people as living in the past, as being this kind of, he described it as like a caveman type people. And it speaks to like a larger issue in professional and amateur sports, where Natives are used as logos and mascots and just kind of caricatures, and not in any way, respected by these organizations, but more just used for profit.
Now, let's be clear, the Braves don't have Native caricatures as a mascot or a logo, but what's the history here? That hasn't always been the case, right?
Right. Yeah, that's kind of a recent development. Going all the way back to 1912, so 107 years ago, a member of Tammany Hall, James Gaffney, bought what were then the Boston Rustlers, and he changed the name to the Boston Braves and changed it to the logo of a Native man wearing an eagle feather headdress. And that kind of stuck with them as they moved to Milwaukee and then Atlanta. And in Atlanta, they actually built in the left field bleachers a teepee, and they would have a mascot and a man in what is kind of more nondescript regalia come out and do a dance around the teepee every time one of the Braves players hit a home run. And so that was briefly retired in 1983, and then the Braves went on a losing streak, and so they brought him back, and his name was Chief Nakahoma, as in like knock a home run. And they finally retired him in 1986, and they removed their logo in 1989. But the tomahawk has remained, and the chant was actually not introduced until 1991, when Deion Sanders, very famous and popular dual sports standout for Florida State University, came and joined the Braves, and he kind of brought it with him from Florida State, whose mascot is the Seminoles.
Now, we also know that there's been use of Native culture in teams. Obviously, we're talking about the Braves, but also the Chicago Blackhawks and the NFL team in Washington, D.C. Why do you think these teams are so resistant to changing the logos and the names that are associated with Native culture and history?
I mean, it comes down pretty simply to money. We're talking about billionaires who own these sports franchises who can easily fund a rebranding effort, but they just don't want to go through the trouble of doing that. And that's why it took so long to get Chief Wahoo off the Cleveland Indians sidelines, and also off of their hats and their jerseys. Like, this stuff has always been kind of a knockout, dragout, years-long fight. I mean, the people have been asking the Braves for movement on this since the mid-90s, specifically the tomahawk chop. And I mean, going even further back for the mascot and the logo for the Washington NFL team, until you can create enough of a public uproar to where it becomes, you know, kind of financially detrimental to continue having the mascot, these team owners aren't going to change it because they don't interact. They don't partner with Native nations. They don't really care about how Native people feel. And actions always speak louder than words. And in the case of the Braves, that's absolutely true.
One of the exception to that I was going to note here is that the Florida State Seminoles actually have the approval of the Seminole tribe. Why is that unique? How did that come about?
You're absolutely right. And even Florida State wasn't always partnered with the Seminole tribe. They weren't always respectful of their traditions and the way that they would depict them. I believe the mascot's name is Sammy the Seminole, but they had a white person dressing up and he'll ride out on a horse and put a spear in midfield ahead of the games. And, you know, it took a long time for them to partner with the tribe. But once they did that, it's able to produce both like a financial and a cultural two-way street that allows the tribe to not be wholly giving up its name and likeness and image rights. Florida State has started to implement more Native classes and whatnot into their curriculum. And it's something, it is unique. It's a rare instance in which an athletic program saw that it was doing something wrong and sought to kind of right that. And I mean, it's heartening, but it's absolutely the exception to the rule.
Now, what's the solution, if you will, here? I mean, is it just scrapping the offensive chants altogether, or is it something similar to what Florida State was able to achieve? Obviously, these are multi-million dollar franchises that do not have an educational arm to, as you said about Florida State, really incorporate or expand the Native curriculum there. So I'm not sure if a partnership would work, but is that one way to approach it?
I mean, if asking me personally, my approach would be that with Florida State, they were mentioning a specific tribe, right? I mean, you're talking Blackhawks, the Kansas City Chiefs, Washington NFL team, Atlanta Braves. These are all just kind of general stereotypes of what, you know, Americans view Native people as nowadays. It historicizes us. It makes us a people of the past and not a people of the present, which we are. My solution to that is, I mean, it might sound a little radical to these teams, but they should all just change their names. There's if you look across the board in the NFL, NHL, MLB, like there's no other racial group that is leaned on so heavily to just function as a mascot. These sports institutions, when they implemented them originally, whether it's in 1912 or throughout the 20th century, they didn't have to think about it because we weren't a presence in the media. We weren't a presence in politics. We weren't around in a way that forced them to look at it. And so my response would be just change your name. I mean, then you obviously do away with the chants and the emotions and all of that. I mean, I know that it would cost money, but it's cost us, I think, a lot more over the years to have been placed in the past by these mascots and just kind of ignored. So, yeah, change the name.
Nick Martin is a staff writer for The New Republic and a member of the Saponi tribe. Nick, thanks for being with us.
Thank you so much.